Petrol has gone above the €2 a litre mark this week. That's following the European Union's decision to reduce its dependence on Russian oil suppliers, something that the general public did expect. The excise relief that the government did announce. We spoke about this with AA Ireland on the 20th of May, so just near 2 weeks ago. And they were discussing the fact that it's basically been wiped out. That was on the 20th of May. So now we're on the 1st of June with petrol reaching the €2 mark. It's definitely been wiped out now. There's no argument to be made. I'm joined, though, on the line to discuss all things fuel and the current rise in costs by the Chief Executive of Fuels for Ireland. That is Kevin McPartlin. Thank you so much, Kevin, for taking the time.
Not at all.
Kevin, just one day ago, the Taoiseach did warn of further fuel price hikes. And as I'm mentioning, petrol now above the €2 litre mark.
I can't say I'm surprised, because if you have a look at what's happened since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and when that happened, we were already at a high price point on international markets for oil products. But when Russia invaded, it made a massive shock to the international oil market, because about one third of all of Europe's oil and gas was coming from Russia. And while no formal sanctions were in place immediately, a lot of companies, fuel for Ireland members included, and a lot of countries decided they wanted to get out of doing business with Russia. And so from that point on, people started looking for alternate suppliers. That definitely did mean that there was an increase in global prices at a wholesale level. And that means that, unfortunately, that's the price that dictates what we must charge our customers going forward. In the last couple of weeks...
Okay, let me stop you there for one second, Kevin. Right. Right? People do understand that that is what dictates the price that people or those who own the petrol pumps, etc., are having to pay or charge the customer. Why is it, though, that literally one day, less than 24 hours after the Taoiseach is warning of this, we see the petrol prices go up so quickly? Because I'm sure that all these pumps across the country didn't get a delivery of fuel in the past 24 hours.
Well, a lot of them will have done, first of all, but that isn't really the point. The point is that the Taoiseach was reflecting a reality that was already apparent. And, you know, the fact that the EU sanctions were coming into place was very obvious. It was being flagged for a few days beforehand, and the markets began to respond to that already. So the fuel that you are paying today is really dictated by the wholesale price 2 days ago.
Right. So if that's the case, and people can understand that, right? If it is the wholesale price of 2 days ago, then why did it change, would say, within the past 12 hours, 18 hours, 20 hours?
The wholesale prices have been increasing over a number of weeks. And if you look, it's not that there was any sudden sharp change.
No, but there was still a change.
But the reason last week happened.
Yeah, but Kevin, there was still a change within the past 24 hours. I understand what you're saying, but to follow that logic, then it doesn't make sense for the change so quickly in the 24 hours.
But you're presuming that it's in response to what the Taoiseach said. It's not. It was happening anyway. And the other thing that's happened in the last week, and this is a bit of a blip in oil prices every year at this time. Memorial Week in the UK, in the US, is the start of a big sort of driving holiday season. So you had last weekend alone about 40 million Americans drove more than 80 kilometres. That's a massive global shock. It happens that weekend every year. Sort of correspond with that, although that's a minor part of it. The bigger part is the changes to global markets that are caused by recognition these sanctions were coming, and that was being priced into the market over the last couple of weeks. It's been gradual, but it happened.
I think one thing a lot of listeners would like me to point out is the fact that, yes, you know, they're not the Chief Executive of Fuels for Ireland. They don't fully understand the situation to the degree that someone like you would. But price gouging is something that is on the minds of the Irish motorists. And you're mentioning things there like, you know, the Memorial Weekend in the US and the amount of miles, you know, those in the US would travel versus us in Ireland, and, you know, the distances compared to this landmass of this country. Obviously, it will create changes in prices, but not by that much. And each person who owns a petrol station in this country, why is it that they may have all bought their fuel on one day, yet the disparity in terms of the prices can be 10, 15 cents in the difference? Explain that to the listener.
I'd be surprised if there's too many places where you would have a 10 or 15.
Well, I can tell you, actually, I can tell you this, because County Kildare, for example, is one price. I went into Dublin on Monday, and between two petrol stations, there are less than 5K in the difference, Kevin, and there was 9 cent in the difference, near 10 cent, obviously, there.
Okay, I don't think that's very common. I'm not saying it doesn't happen occasionally, but I don't think it's very common. The reason why it may happen is you will have some petrol stations that will get 3 or 4 deliveries per day. And then you'll have some petrol stations that may get 1 delivery per week. There are far fewer of those, but that does happen. So if you are one of those stations that have large storage on your forecourt and you bought a week ago, the price that you bought at a week ago will be considerably less than that which is being paid today or tomorrow. So those things can happen. It's very unusual that you have that big a difference in an area. As I said, I'm not saying it didn't happen, but it's unusual. But that's why those things occur. And to come back to your point about sort of, you know, this language of price gouging, it's absolutely not the case that fuel retailers are making more now than they did when fuel was 25, 30, 40% cheaper. It just isn't true. It isn't the case. The only people who are making more money right now are actually the government because of the VAT that's charged on a high price.
Explain to our listeners why you're saying it isn't true that the people who are owning the petrol pumps or the petrol stations aren't taking in more money. Just expand on that.
Because typically, so fuels are a very low margin product and the competition on them is exceptionally tight. So, the very fact that you can say that you passed 2 stations within 5K of one another and there was a price disparity is because they put their prices up in very large illuminated letters or numbers outside their site. Everybody can see it. So if you are charging more than the place down the road and you can afford to drop your price, the incentive is there to do so because you get more trade. So it's the most competitive business in the country, I would contend. The margins are very low and they're not based on a percentage. They're actually based on, usually, on a fixed markup per litre. So whether the wholesale price is 1.50 or 1 euro or 50 cent, the markup will still be the same for the petrol station. However, the government charges VAT on it. They charge their take on it increases as the price goes up. So if you're paying 2 euro today for a litre of diesel, 86, 87 cent of that is going straight to the government in the form various taxes, duties, excises and levies. Yes. And that is more than they would have been collecting this time last year,
okay,
despite the excise decrease.
Kevin, you mentioned there some of the stations that are getting 3 or 4 deliveries a day versus one that would get, let's say, twice a week. I don't know exactly how it would work. Explain the difference there. Those who are getting the 3 or 4 deliveries a day, should their price automatically be higher or lower than those receiving less deliveries?
It'd be more dynamic. When I say that the price that they charge consumers depends on what their wholesale price is, they may buy at a different wholesale price if they get a load at 9 o'clock in the morning and they get one at 12 noon. That's how dynamic pricing is in this industry. So if they got a higher price at 9 o'clock than they got at noon, you would expect them to drop their prices very shortly afterwards. If you have a site that gets a delivery once every 4 days, clearly they don't have as much scope to make those changes. So it's not that, you know, having more deliveries makes you more or less expensive. It just means that your prices are more dynamic. They will react more quickly to wholesale changes.
Okay, I want to play you a little bit of audio I had on the 20th of May, as I said at the beginning of this interview, from Paddy Cumman, who is with AA Ireland. And he spoke about this county. So just have a listen to what Paddy said about Kildare.
In Kildare, that tends to be one of the more expensive counties. Certainly in the last time we saw the increase is well above 2 euro. It was Kildare County which had a lot of the very heavy prices. So look, it kind of was inevitable for a number of reasons. Obviously, the reduction in the excise duty did give us a temporary relief. We, at the time, back in March, April, we were suffering from really high oil prices. We get a lot of our diesel via Russia. Diesel in particular, Ciara, seems to be one of the ones which will probably start increasing and keep increasing for the time being. As supplies vary.
Explain to me why this county would see higher prices than the capital city, for example.
Yeah, it may be not that they're experiencing higher prices than Dublin city, but it will be.
Well, Kevin,
the reason I keep
saying about Dublin is because I myself would travel between Dublin and Kildare a lot, and I have noticed over the past, you know, however many months, that a lot of the time this county is more expensive.
There's a very broad range of prices in Dublin. It probably has a broader spread than anywhere else. But Kildare, it will be, or typically would be, above the national average. And the reason for that is because you have all of those major motorways going through Kildare. And motorway service stations are more expensive to operate. So typically, the price of fuel at a motorway service station is more expensive than it would be at your kind of local rural or suburban.
But aren't they bringing in more, you know, custom then?
They are, but the cost of operating them is much higher. And typically, not always the case, but typically they're higher. And that would explain, you know, off the cuff, without doing any research, that would explain to me why Kildare prices on average might be higher. What I would suggest is that Kildare residents probably don't account for most of the traffic in those forecourts, those motorway forecourts. So it may be that the
Well, I would argue with that, Kevin, and the reason I would is because a huge number of motorists would leave this county every day to go and travel in Dublin, even now that we're still in the pandemic. So they would be using those forecourts.
No, I understand. It's not that they're not using the motorways, but they probably have access to local service stations before they get to the motorways. So I think the bulk of people who are fueling in kind of County Kildare are maybe on the road to Cork or whatever. I would imagine
It's not that I'm trying to like catch you out or anything here, but it's just that I am somebody who lives in Kildare, frequents forecourts in County Kildare, and also frequents forecourts in Dublin City, County, a lot, regularly. And this is my general experience. I can start to you know, take images to prove it, I guess, to people, because at the end of the day, it's only the word of mouth here. But it is my experience that in Dublin, you're getting cheaper rates.
Well, as I say, look, I think there are places in Dublin that have lower, and there are places that have higher prices. And, you know, I get that criticism from people in Dublin quite frequently, that the spread of price in Dublin is very great. So, okay. You know, look, I can't talk about individual person's experience. I can tell you that the trend is that Kildare as a county will be higher, and that a large part of that will be because of the preponderance of those large motorway service stations in Kildare that there wouldn't be in other parts of the country.
Okay, I'm just having a quick look here, Kevin, at the pump prices today. I'm taking the 1st of June as two examples, obviously. These are the kind of better pump prices here at the moment. There's one in Dublin 3 that's at 192.9 cent, right? And if you look elsewhere in Dublin and Palmerstown, it's at 195.8 cent. Now, they're two different businesses or two different companies that would deliver to these two petrol stations I'm speaking about. But why the disparity by, yes, one can say only 3 cent, but why that difference?
Let's be straight about what we're talking about here, Kira. That 3% is about 1.5% of the price. You know, if you go to Tesco and Dunnes to buy a tin of beans and there's 1.5% in the price difference, is that seen as some sort of strange anomaly? I don't think it is.
Kevin, one sec, right? So if you're going to make that, you know, example. So the tin of beans, are you speaking about branded Tesco beans versus branded another supermarket beans? Is that what you're saying? Or non-branded?
I'm saying that you could have precisely the same product. You could have Kevin McPartland baked beans that are on sale in one supermarket, and there would be more than a 1.5% difference in the price with another supermarket, and you wouldn't come to that supermarket.
Yeah, but Kevin, you and I both know in that case that it is. We've spoken about this at the current, you know, cost of living crisis, that you can get non-branded with, say, beans, a supermarket non-branded versus a big brand of beans, and there'd be a lot more in the difference in terms of that. You're buying the brand there. That doesn't really hold up in this conversation.
No,
do you know what I mean?
Because Kira, what I'm saying is you could have precisely the same product, whether it's branded or unbranded, and have a price differential between two different stores. And you can have two different stores within the same...
Does that much, though, Kevin? If you think about... Yeah, but if you do think about the... You know, let's talk about the supermarkets. If you think about the little flyers that come in your door, by and large, you go into whatever brand of supermarket versus whatever brand of supermarket, going in to buy the branded product of beans, they're really probably 99 times out of 100, the exact same price.
I'm not sure that that's the case. But the example that you're giving is two different retailers anyway. So it's not at all unusual that you would have what is, frankly, a small discrepancy, 1.5 cent. If you're talking about the example that you gave earlier of a 9 cent difference in a price per litre, that's about 4.5% in the difference, in the price difference. That's not uncommon in any other sector. I don't understand why people think that it would be remarkable in ours.
I guess because people maybe would have to travel to get a better price, a much further distance when it comes to fuel, and that would be taken away from the benefit of travelling to get the cheaper fuel versus, you know, if you live in a town like but say Naas, Newbridge here in County Kildare, you could have five petrol stations, five supermarkets at your front door.
I don't want you to think that I think that the current high prices are a good thing. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just explaining why they are high, and I'm explaining why there could be a price differential between two different forecourts. It's not that I'm saying that you know, this is desirable. It isn't, because if you're thinking about, you know, from a national economic perspective, fuel is a key driver of inflation, because every single item that you find on your supermarket shelves this afternoon is delivered using diesel. So every time that you have an increase in fuel price, it has a disproportionate inflation effect.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to argue that it's a good thing that prices are high at the moment. I'm just explaining to you why they are high, that, you know, that we're reacting to global phenomena. And on a local level, that individual forecourts have different running costs.
And I really appreciate that. But I'm trying to get across, a lot of our listeners, you know, scratching their heads, not understanding when they're experiencing these two different situations, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, in terms of pricing at different stations across the country, across the county, you know, across 10 kilometres, 5 kilometres, whatever you want to use as an example. That doesn't make sense. People are scratching their
heads. Can I suggest to you, Ciara, I have about half of my conversations with the media in relation to pricing are along these lines. Why is it there can be such a great difference between prices, which, you know, within an area? And the other half are those who say, well, prices are always so close to one another in the same area that it shows that there's price fixing. You know, these things can't both be true. The truth of the matter is, this is an exceptionally competitive business, because we're the only business that I know of that has to put the price up outside the site before you ever get onto the site. And you can say, I'm not paying that, I'm going to keep on going. People have that option. I know, and I hear what you're saying about sometimes that means people have to travel further and it's not worth their while. I get that. But in terms of competition, that makes this exceptionally competitive as an industry. And it means that the margins are exceptionally tight. So if you go into your local service station today and spend €70 on diesel or petrol, and I walk in behind you, get no fuel, and buy a cappuccino for €2.50, they will make more money on the cappuccino than they've made on the €70 of fuel. That's the reality of this business.
Okay, Kevin, where do we go next in terms of the fuel prices in this country? Are we just going to see them increase further and further?
I mean, nobody knows. Anybody who tells you they know what's going to happen with fuel prices is lying.
I know, but obviously someone like yourself has more knowledge than someone like me.
You might be overestimating me there, Ciara.
No, but you know, you're the chief executive of Fuels for Ireland.
The case is that fuel prices going forward are going to be largely influenced by the geopolitical situation on a global basis, and in particular by the Russian situation in Ukraine and the formalization of sanctions against Russian fuel. What is happening now is that Russian fuel suppliers, who can no longer sell into Europe in the same quantities that they used to, have now discounted their product and are selling that to China, India, and a few other places. I'm talking Europe now rather than Ireland, are having to replace that stock, which was traditionally coming from Russia. And that means looking at different sources, so depending more on the Gulf, on Scandinavia, wherever else, and new shipping routes. And that has been going on since Russia invaded. People have been doing that. And in Ireland, we have been doing that. We had a very low level of dependence on Russian oil prior to invasion, and we have been moving away completely from that. So we're in a little bit of a better position than most of Europe, because we have established those new supply relationships and new supply routes. So we should probably be less impacted by other European states. But I think they are going to have a problem now in trying to secure new routes. And
so if that's the case, Kevin, does that mean Ireland will see cheaper prices compared to other members of the European Union?
I don't think it will. Because we're all paying wholesale prices. What it might mean a difference to is our shipping costs or whatever. So there might be a marginal advantage for Ireland.
But does that mean in terms of price?
It could do, and it could mean, but it would be very marginal. The big driver of price is always going to be the international wholesale prices, because that's the vast bulk of what you're paying for.
Okay, people just are very confused at the moment about this situation, and it's greatly appreciated you taking the time to speak with me. That is the Chief Executive of Fuels for Ireland, Kevin McPartland. Thank you, Kevin.
No problem. Thanks, Kira.
We heard from the General Secretary of the Irish Postmasters Union on the show on the 19th of May. He spoke about the union telling TDs and senators that €12 million in annual funding was needed to prevent large-scale closures. 873 of the 918 branches of post offices across the country are run by self-employed postmasters. Ned O'Hara gave us all these details, as I said, on the 19th of May. But today, Ned, you did receive good news as the government announced a €30 million package of funding for post office. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me on, Kira.
This €30 million, it's a once-off package, I'm assuming, Ned.
Well, that's what the government said. It's €30 million, it's €10 million a year over 3 years. We would have looked for slightly more than that, and we would have looked for it for a 3 to 5 year period with a review after 3 years. But having said that, we welcome the decision. It's something we've been looking for a long time, and it's something which we have lobbied across all political parties for and got cross-party support for. And we had research saying that that's what communities want. So, like, we had research from Red Sea that said 86% of people would approve of government investing money in the post office network. Now, like, everything here, some people didn't or mightn't agree with that, but 86% of people do.
The post office network has been called the lifeblood of towns and villages across this country. You did ask for €12 million, as I said, on the 19th of May. I know you're appreciative of this €30 million over the 3 years, but it is less than what you've asked for. You asked for about 12 for a 3 to 5 year period. So does this mean down the line, Ned, you're probably going to have to go back to the drawing board in terms of a government conversation?
Yeah, maybe and maybe not, Kira, at the risk of giving a political answer, if you like. We do see it as a win-win-win, if you like. We do see it as a win for our customers. We do see it as a win for the government in that they're solving a problem that people say that is there. And we see it as a win for us in that it gives us some certainty, because a lot of postmasters who are paid by transaction, they're not paid a wage, would have been considered in their future for the next 2 or 3 years if there was no certainty. So it gives us that amount of certainty. And we will have to work hard. To get people to support us in relation to using our services. And we would ask members of the public to use the post office, even if it's only for one item a year, one item a month. Like, people could or should maybe buy their television license in the post office rather than do it online. Maybe they should open the savings bank book. And to ensure that the service does remain, I think we proved our worth during the COVID, when everybody was sick to 2 kilometres or 5 kilometres. Postmasters were the only government service who stayed open, and a lot of them went over and above to help people who were in trouble during COVID, between delivering stuff for them, checking they were okay, and all that type of stuff.
You've worded it as needing to work hard, you know, to ensure the life of these post offices. What does that mean to you, though? What does it mean that you'll be doing in terms of working hard over the next, you know, three years?
Well, in that we look at to get more new services. In the last 18 months, we've taken on Bank of Ireland services, and we provide banking services across the country. There are 500 post offices within 5 kilometres of where there are no banks. So when banks are withdrawn from the market and face-to-face, we hope to or intend to fill that gap where people want to go in and see a friendly face when they do their local banking transactions. And we are there. We do Bank of Ireland, we do AIB, we do Ulster Bank. So a lot of people don't know that. So we would ask people to do their banking transactions. They can cash withdrawals from the post office. They can buy top-ups. They can do a range of services that may not be available, that may not be aware that we do. So we're asking people to use their local post office and Dáilcigh support their local economy. There's a lot of research that says money that's generated locally is spent locally, and money that's paid through banks, digitally through banks, a lot of that money doesn't even get spent in the local environment. A lot of it gets spent outside of the country completely.
Ned, I just want to ask you one specific question before you go. The union is committed to working to develop the network, as you guys have said, with this news that you've received today, and keep as many post offices as possible serving communities across the country. With that line, that would lead me to believe that some post offices will unfortunately close.
Well, at the moment, there's a template, if you like, or a protocol where the government and on post say that they will provide a post office within 15 kilometres in rural areas and 3 kilometres in urban areas. And when a post post office or a postmaster retires, Kira, and postmasters are entitled to retire as, like everybody else, that post office would be advertised. Up to now, that post office was only advertised if it was in the 750 that said they were wanted. In this scenario, every post office would be advertised. Unless then somebody takes up the position, then the post office won't close. But somebody won't take up the position unless it's attractive to them. And this money should help it make it more attractive to people to want to provide the service, particularly in areas of low return or an office that wouldn't be that busy. As I said, we're paid by transactions. So this will help support that. Will it stop post offices closing? We hope so. Like, we're a union. We want as many members as possible. So we would hope it helps post offices close. But ultimately, it depends on people using the service. And like as I said, if people just did one thing, like if they bought a TV licence, if they opened a savings bank account for their children or their grandchildren, everything like that helps.
Okay, I appreciate your time this afternoon. That is Ned O'Hara, the General Secretary of the Irish Postmasters Union. The government today at 12 o'clock announced a €30 million package of funding for post offices. So that's €10 million a year over the next 3 years. Now, today is the 1st of June and residents of this county, in particular Newbridge, will know that the June Fest is obviously synonymous with June. And because today is the 1st of June, what else could we possibly be speaking about? And Annie Morris, the Yarn Bomber in Chief, does join me now. How are you, Annie?
Oh, hello. I'm very, very well. Very excited, obviously. Big weekend for Newbridge.
Very big weekend. The 3rd to the 6th of June. Obviously, the long weekend in terms of this month and the June Festival. The big celebrations will be taking place this weekend. But you are on in particular to talk about the amazing 20 metres, 40 shades of green that have been knitted because the Liffey Linear Park in Newbridge will be seeing a special guest this year and very much connected with this county.
Yeah, well, I think it was 4 months ago I came on and asked people to put forward suggestions who could we knit this year, and the choice, everyone's choice, listeners' choice, was St Bridget. So I came on and said, would people be able to knit us squares, 10-inch green squares, and then we'd put them all together? And I have to be honest, I think we thought we'd be lucky if we got about 20. Well, can you guess how many we ended up getting?
Well, I can see images right now, so I'm not going to guess. Tell us.
Yeah, over 600. We had over 600 squares that came from all over, not only the county, they came from all over Ireland, and they were sent in to Alison White here at White Fabrics in Newbridge, and every single morning Alison would turn up and there would be a parcel at the door for the Yarn Bombers for St Bridget's Cloak. So we cannot thank people enough, and of course every single shade of green is covered.
Literally.
And
is it about 20 metres, is it?
It's over 20 metres long. Jeez. Yeah, and I have to say Alison White ran this project, and boy did she run with it. Not only did she crochet together over 600 squares, and listeners who understand crochet will understand how long that has taken her. Not only did she do that, but she then went on to crochet St Bridget herself. So if you go into the Whitewater, and we have to thank the Whitewater because they really got behind this and allowed her to be displayed in the Whitewater, which means that she's going to be protected from the elements, because with the sheer volume of wool that this has taken up, we couldn't put her in the linear park in case it rained for the month of June, which occasionally it does.
It does. Yeah, no, it's really cool because that was my thought the minute I saw the photo of St. Bridget and her cloak in the Whitewater Shopping Centre in the town. I was like, oh God, how will they get that out to the Liffey Linear Park? How will it stay dry? Because we do know that there is some sprinkling of rain during June in Newbridge, but it's absolutely amazing. Tell us a bit more about what Alison has done in particular.
Well, Alison was responsible for coordinating the whole project pretty much from the shop in Cutley Road. So people would bring in the squares. She would take every single square home and sit down with her dog and patchwork them all together. And again, crafters, if you go into Whitewater and you stand upstairs and look down on her, you will just see that skill that's taken, because she's done it in such a way that it's just, it really does look like the colour. I cannot tell you. We have another lady called Debbie Smith, hello Debbie, in Newbridge, who came into the shop with a bag of sheep. So not only have we got St Bridget with her enormous cloak of 20 metres in length, but we have the most beautiful crocheted sheep dotted all over it as well. So it's just absolutely beautiful. And of course, we're doing all of this for the KWW SPCA, and we'd love people to donate on our GoFundMe page, or get ready, dog owners, come to Bark in the Park on Sunday. For the first time ever, we're having a huge dog festival in the park, and you'll go through the linear park, which has been beautifully yarn bombed again by the whole community. Having not seen anybody for 2 years, everybody's come together for the yarn bomb this year, so we're absolutely delighted. And when you go there, you're going to see animals from rabbits to llamas to snakes to a millipede parade. So the Newbridge is just full of colour, of life, of wool, and of art, with pop-up shows coming on at the weekend as well. We've got a band on the bank on Sunday the 5th. There really is something for everybody here. So come on and see her, see St. Bridget, and support the KWWSPCA by just making a little donation to the animal shelter. We'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, Bark in the Park in particular, obviously happening, as you say, on Sunday. And that begins at 11 a.m, Annie. That's at the Liffey Linear Park.
Yeah, it does. And it's a day which is just for animal lovers, really. There's going to be all sorts of things for dogs and their animal lovers to do and their owners to do. We've got vets are going to be there. There's going to be shows. There's going to be a few little competitions. It's just going to be the most perfect day. So bring your dog down. Come and walk through the park and enjoy the talent there is in this county. And I can't thank people enough for getting behind what we do, because we're all volunteers, Kira. There's nobody, who loves this really more than I think the people who contribute, because when you see it in June come alive, and especially against the backdrop of June Fest, where you have the musicians in the park, you have the artists with their shows. It's just lovely to be part of this festival. It really, really is.
They say don't wish your life away, but I'm always really sad when July and August, etc. comes and all the yarn bombing is taken down. I think it should be left up all year, but I totally understand
all that work.
Would you
know what, Kira? The thing is that, you know, if you had your Christmas decorations out for 12 months
but you
a
see,
year,
Annie, I'd love
you'd
that.
You'd be sick.
I wouldn't. I'd love it.
Now, you see, so you like a bit of sparkle. All I can say is, again, if we lived in Miami, maybe we'd leave them out a bit longer, but I suppose the problems we face is the maintenance involved.
Absolutely.
So, for example, a big thing fell down today, was pulled down today. So we do say to people, when you're going there, especially with your children, if you could just sort of make sure they don't go tugging and pulling at things, because we have a very, very small team of devoted volunteers whose job it is now for the next 4 weeks to go down and just tidy up and pull things up and put them back into position. So we can do that for 4 weeks, and then we have to put our feet up, Kira, for the rest of the year.
Absolutely.
And actually for the next 11 months.
You deserve to do so. It's gorgeous.
And Alison, if you're passing White's Fabrics, come in and say hello to Alison, because she's sitting here having a rest behind the counter after 4 months of crochet. I seriously don't know how she's done it. I think she's a legend.
I saw some really cool photos.
If you're in Newbridge, come and say hello to Alison White. She's amazing.
I saw some really cool photos of yourself and Alison the other day. And we've got a text in here from Wendy in Newbridge, and she says, Alison is a great, very helpful girl. This is how she words it. I love the chats when I go into the fabric shop. Teresa's not too bad either, she says, with some winky faces. So that comes in from Wendy. And
you know what? Now listen to this. I'm in the shop now with Teresa and Alison, and they'll be delighted when I relay that information to them.
Good.
They'll be delighted. They'll be delighted.
God,
yeah.
Good
so listen, thank you so much, Newbridge, for getting behind us once again this year. And I really hope you all enjoy June Fest, because literally everything you want is in Newbridge for the next 4 days. Everything.
All year round, you have to say, Annie.
Well,
not just the next
all
4 days.
All year round. But if you're looking for something to do after being visually, starved for the last 2 years, come to Newbridge, because the place is looking beautiful.
Yeah, loads of stuff that is happening. Thank you so much, Annie Morris, of course. Yarn Bomber in Chief, as I like to call her there. It's amazing, the St. Bridget's Cloak in particular, in Whitewater Shopping Centre at the moment. But as Annie was mentioning, Bark in the Park in aid of KWWSBCA, taking place on Sunday, that's the 5th of June at 11 a.m. The Georgia Street Party is also taking place on the 4th and 5th of June, that's Saturday and Sunday from 1. And the Monster Family Fun Day is at St. Conlett's GAA Park, in the car park, I should say. That is on Monday, the 6th of June from 12 p.m. I'm joined now by Owen Corrie. He's the travel and aviation journalist here in County Kildare. Well, across the country, obviously, but he's so relevant to us here, Owen, because, as always, I have to mention you are an Ardcloch resident. How are you?
I'm good form, and we're reporting from our clock, where all the action is this afternoon.
I also want to congratulate you, Owen, because I saw on Twitter over the past couple of weeks that you got married. So a huge congratulations to you.
Thank you so much. It was a very special day, very quiet. ourselves, the two witnesses, and the mammy of the bride, who was given just 24 hours notice.
Oh.
I leave it to the listeners to work out the what sort of reaction that would have got. But it was a really lovely day, and we kept it all in the county. Photo shoot was back in Uthraud at the hilltop, the lovely hilltop cemetery in Uthraud, beside our clock, the graveyard with the best view in Ireland, we call it, back at the K Club, and then Kilkee Castle, where we went for the evening, and they were given an amazing welcome. So kept it a full Kildare day and a full Kildare occasion, and it was couldn't have gone better.
I mean, you come on, you talk about all these different places one can travel, but you're obviously saying a lot about this county. So some people may feel like they don't need to travel over to Dublin Airport in the next few weeks, because we know the scenes over the weekend, Owen, were absolutely chaotic. There's no other word for it. But today, Dublin Airport Authority did announce some new, I guess, restrictions or regulations that will be happening over the coming weeks. One is to introduce passenger holding areas. That's for those who are early or arriving too early for their flight. What are these and what's going to be happening?
A bit like Manute Mart used to be in the old days. You'd bring the sheep in and put them in a little pen, and then they'd be brought in for the sales area. It's really interesting. There was a lot of hullabaloo about this plan. They were asked to prepare this by the government, the minister, saying the scenes last Sunday were disgraceful. What are you going to do about it? Very little they can do about it, because the scenes last Sunday were caused by a massive no-show of people in the airport in the morning. 20 security officers cried off sick. Another 17 that were supposed to be cleared to come to work weren't cleared in time. So what we see is a little bit about the security queues. They're going to bring people up from Cork Airport, about 40 people from Cork Airport for the weekend, but a lot about passengers. And as you say, a holding area for passengers who arrive too early at the airport. A really, really negative reaction to that on social media.
Now, Owen, this is the crazy scenes we saw at Dublin Airport are not just happening in Dublin, it's happening across Europe. Schiphol Airport, I believe Brussels was also affected, and Manchester in the UK, was it? And one other, I think, in Britain was affected.
Oh, more than one. Bristol had a terrible day Sunday, Glasgow had a terrible day Sunday. Manchester has been on and off 4 a.m. this morning. They were queuing to the car park in Manchester. As you say, Schiphol, which is one of the biggest in Europe, has an ongoing problem with this. And
is it the exact same issues at those airports?
Exact same issue is staffing. Getting security staffing trained up and cleared and licensed to do. You can't just bring someone in, obviously, from the street. The ongoing problems, we had sort of a preview of this about 3-4 years ago when the TSA in America changed their regulation with regular 4-hour queues through North America, and Toronto has been pretty horrific in the last 2 months as well. The difference with Dublin is that while they, when it came to the summer schedules in March, we had all of these scenes. People, that's when they introduced queuing outside the terminal for the first time. They had been getting by. People were listening to that advice 2.5 hours before a short haul, 3.5 before a long haul arrive in the airport. And then last Sunday, it went out, very, very stretched, and all aspects of the airport are under pressure. Bag check-in, even the baggage hall when you come back is under pressure. The services for the airlines themselves. One of our tour operators has been cancelling flights merrily, including some of the Irish flights all week, and people are stranded all over Europe. But all of those things under pressure went over the edge last Sunday. And Ciara, the big problem here is that trust, that you will not miss your flight if you're there 2.5 hours in advance. That was breached. So what we've seen then...
Yeah, 1,400 people missing their flights.
What we've seen then is a lot of people arriving, in the early, early morning, people with afternoon flights ahead of people with 9 a.m. flights. I think a lot of the messaging out of the plan this afternoon is don't come too early. We want you there early. They've kept to the 2.5 hours for short haul and the 3.5 for long haul. That's very interesting. They didn't change that advice. But they did say they would be triaging, a bit like arriving in Nice Hospital. They will be triaging people as they arrive. And anybody who is very early for a flight will be put in a holding area. I suspect that really is to get people to think twice before they come too early to the airport. I wouldn't imagine that there will be that much different, but between the queuing over the next four incredibly busy weekends like coming in Dublin Airport, I wouldn't imagine that there would be that much difference in the amount of security channels they can open, because all their staff won't be trained up until July. But what they are trying to do is change passenger behaviour so we're not arriving too early at the airport.
Would you feel comfortable heading up to Dublin, would say, in the next couple of days, Owen?
I'll be flying out myself Saturday, so it'll be very interesting to watch. I do feel that, you know, we must stick to the advice that they give us, because the airlines can't manage check-in desks. Nothing can really be managed at the airport if everybody's arriving hours and hours and hours in advance of the flight. So stay cool. It's their problem, and they will probably manage their way through it. As the summer goes on, they're delivering 30 people a week with the property cleared to work in security. As the summer goes on, the security queues will come under control. But if they run into something like happened last Sunday with effectively 37 people below what was rostered at no notice whatsoever, we can expect a blip. It's going to be a while before it's all solved.
Okay, yeah, blip. That is how Dublin Airport Authority described the weekend scenes. A lot of people feel like that should not have been the word used. They think they may have made things a bit more seamless over the coming days. But yourself, Owen, heading off this weekend, hopefully to celebrate your marriage again. Huge congratulations to Owen Carey there. And thank you for joining me, of course, travel and aviation journalist. Mags did get back in touch because unfortunately I haven't been able to play your WhatsApp voice note, Mags. And she said she was just saying well done on the fuel interview. She goes between Kildare and Dublin and often find the fuel cheaper. Mags often finds, this is a good one for anybody who's going up and down every day or every few days, the fuel is cheaper in Palmerstown or on the N7 compared to Newbridge. That comes in from Mags, somebody obviously heading up all the time. Thanks so much, Mag. Appreciate it. And somebody else has been in touch. 0833 97 97 97. Unfortunately, Caroline is your name. How are you, Caroline? She says that good afternoon. Security should never have been privatised in terms of Dublin Airport. That is, give it back to the guards, says Caroline, or to the police. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for getting in touch. Have a great rest of your Wednesday.